Hello, and welcome to Knights of the Night Actual Play Podcast. The following podcast isn't going to be our typical episode. It will start with a description of most of the players' characters, and then a quick recounting of the first two chapters of our story, which we have, unfortunately, lost to the mad gods of the internet. Now, please enjoy Chapter 1 and 2 of Shit Luck.
I'm Tom. I play Jay Alton, an Iraqi veteran, born and raised in Cleveland, lived on the east side. I have a father who's a preacher, a mother who has passed away. Her lengthy illness killed our finances, which is what caused me to join the army in the first place. While I was over in Iraq, I met some members of the Ascended One, which is a cult, very ancient, originally started in Egypt. I got involved with them. At the same time, I got involved with the world of darkness, the creatures that I hadn't previously known about. When I came back to Cleveland, I tried to start my own business, but I kept in touch with them, and I'm a member of the Ascended Ones, beginning member. And then eventually, I was brought into the Task Force Siren group as one of the many members that were being pulled together for a mission.
My name is Jim, and I play Tony Bonadio. He is an Afghan vet. He was a medic and also a demolitions and explosive expert. When he was in Afghan, they replaced some injuries he had with claws and fangs. And then when he got back to the States, they replaced an eye that he lost with a hypnotic eye. He was reluctantly dragged into the Siren group. The Chiron group didn't like him, so he was one of the people that were picked to get thrown into this Task Force Siren. Oh, there's also online longer explanation of my background. I'm one of the weird people that like to write out a complete background story, so it should be out there somewhere.
Hi, I'm Mike, and I'm playing Michael Clay, a middle-aged member of the Aegis Kaidoru, the Skrull. He is more of a support staff, and now he wants to step up into the front lines kind of situation. He's an engineer slash field tester of ancient artifacts and equipment, and part of what his group has been involved in is to keep the records of the artifacts that he finds in the field and basically unlock their secrets and learn how to use them. And this is his opportunity to, like I said, get out of the lab and get into the field. And so he is a little starstruck and a little naive about working in the field, but he also comes with some pretty interesting abilities and skills and can't wait to contribute to the team.
My name's Greg. I play Dr. Lucius Miles. The concept for my character is a troubled doctor. He has a background, grew up in Maryland, came to Cleveland. His father's still in Maryland. He's got some background issues with his father. Lucius has some military background as well. He was an emergency field physician, came back. He's now head of emergency care at Lutheran Hospital here in Cleveland. Dr. Lucius is a member of the Chiron groups brought into Task Force Siren a few weeks ago.
Because of a recording mishap, we don't have Chapter 1 and Chapter 2 of the adventure. So what we're going to do is we're going to have the storyteller Scott give a lead-in overview of what happened before, how we all got together, and then we will discuss Chapter 1 recap, in which there's Scene 1, 2, and 3. And then Chapter 2, Scene 1, 2, and 3.
All right, this story is called Shit Luck. The reason that the group got together was under the auspices of Task Force Siren, which is a secret government task force put together to explain the disappearance of 12 Task Force Valkyrie agents' disappearances in Cleveland, Ohio. The group was taken and put together from several different conspiracies and compacts throughout the world of darkness. They trained together for 1 month in the Washington, D.C. area before being put into Cleveland, Ohio under deep cover and are going to be investigating the disappearance of these 12 agents. The first chapter in our story begins with Scene 1, Shattered Reflection, and I'll open it up for discussion among the players.
From what I remember, it was a really short scene that really just involved Ryan's character, John Beamer.
Who unfortunately is not here tonight to talk about it. John was, he woke up early before anyone else had gotten up and went down to the kitchen They live above a wine bar in condos, very nice modern condos above a wine bar called the Market Avenue Wine Bar. That's part of the Great Lakes Brewing Company campus, which is a bunch of little, you know, different restaurants and companies that make up the Great Lakes Brewing Company.
So it just involved John Beamer. He was down making breakfast.
Right.
And got interrupted by the door. Someone was knocking. The door, it's in the back of the building, and sometimes vagrants or people that are hard up will stop
down on their luck.
Down on their luck. We'll ask for
handouts.
Yeah, handouts. And it was one that we've seen before, a vagrant by the name of Side Street Billy. Unfortunately, Side Street Billy has been known to do drugs, and he seemed to be...
Yeah, he's a heroin addict, actually. And he seemed to be...
under the influence when he showed up.
Right, very heavily under the influence. And he asked John why he had glass embedded in his face.
Which, of course, John did not. He didn't know how to respond to that. So I think eventually just Side Street Billy ran away, freaking out. And saying,
yeah, he.
Oh my God!
He wasn't getting the response he wanted from John, and he stumbled down the alleyway and disappeared in confusion and fear. Scene two of this first chapter was called "Shit Luck," which is also the name of the story. This was later that evening, as the characters were getting ready in their deep cover as workers at this Market Avenue wine bar. We're getting the wine bar ready for the evening, for the evening's rush, and that's where the scene takes off. And I'll let the characters who were there that evening discuss what happened that evening.
Ethan, who is just an NPC who works at the wine bar, asked John if he could cover for him. John was supposed to be off that evening, and Ethan instead wanted to be off because he had a girlfriend whose parents were out of town, and he wanted to get busy with her, so... Right. John to fill in.
This is the same John who in the previous scene had looked as if he had glass embedded in his face from Side Street Billy, the vagrant.
Yeah, some of us were working behind the bar. I think Tony was working the door.
You were a bouncer.
I was
helping with prep.
And seating people. And I think Greg's...
I know the doctor was there.
The doctor was there just drinking.
He doesn't actually work at the bar. He works at the hospital, but he hangs there a lot.
He's the only one, I think, out of the group who wasn't actually in cover working at the...
Shu was there?
Right. The doctor, Lucius Miles, he works as an emergency room, the head of emergency room at Lutheran Hospital. He's the head doctor in charge of that department, and he was there drinking. He's the only one that also doesn't live in the condos above the restaurant.
You were talking about your character.
The wine bar.
Sorry.
Then a regular came in, Henry Jacobs. He's a regular customer.
So first of all, we should say that John did switch places with Ethan, giving him the night off, and so John came into work at the Market Avenue Wine Bar.
Did Ethan leave and go to the other bar? He went
down to the Great Lakes Brewing Company, and you eventually found out that he did. He was there for the full evening.
But we switched, but he wasn't in here.
He was not in the Market Avenue Wine Bar where he was supposed to work. He was waiting for his girlfriend at the Great Lakes Brewing Company bar.
Once John agreed, Ethan left, and we assumed it was to be with his girlfriend.
Yeah.
So we don't know.
So we're hanging. So this.
Then a regular customer shows up, Henry Jacobs, sits next to the doctor and someone else.
But he sat next to the doctor. Henry Jacobs sat down, the NPC, who worked for a company named Vitamin B, selling vitamin supplements. And he looked a bit worse for wear. He had some bruises and scratches.
The doctor asked him questions about how he got that way and got frustrated in the lack of a direct answer from Henry Jacobs.
He was all dazed and confused and just was complaining about having bad luck, shit luck, and...
Right, hadn't made a sale in 3 months, and people had beaten him up.
It was
hit him with a car.
He'd been run into by a vehicle.
Lost his wife.
His wife left him as well, exactly. So he gave Lucius the long story there.
There was a hit-and-run accident. He was mugged. He hadn't any sales. 3 months seemed to be the key. And I believe he mentioned that he had a big sale 3 months ago, but right after that, then it all went bad. It was
correct. He could only remember that it was a local beekeeper who he made a big sale to, and that was the extent of it. Anyways, Lucius took swabs of Henry, being the doctor you are. You asked him, you're going to, I think, get him tested and then have him come into the hospital the next day?
He was sweating. He had all, he was pale.
Yeah.
He had a really big pallor. All that. So, yeah, we swabbed the
cuts and contusions.
And Chu...
I don't know. I think it might have been at that time that Chu did a...
Yeah.
Or a psychic read on him and got back three words, perhaps?
Bees ritual, sale. It was right after
sale
that.
Sale being S-A-L-E, the sale of...
Which cattle. Led everyone to believe that the beekeeper had something to do with it, because obviously beekeeper, a sale, and then the ritual, I think, was the big...
Yeah, that was...
Mystery word there.
And I don't know if that had... If that was a trigger or it just seemed like the trigger, but once we got those three words and someone started asking him questions about those things, like, hey, what's this ritual or something like that, that's about like the cue for that car to go right through the window.
Right, which takes us to scene three, Crash Into Me. This scene starts off with a large explosion of a high-end Porsche driving through the large front window of the Market Avenue wine bar.
The wine bar is recessed about a half a level down,
so right.
The car was coming in roughly head level.
Head level, and right for Henry Jacobs, the owner of Shit Luck.
Well, Henry was standing next, or seated next to the doctor.
Right.
And Tony Bonadio. And, if I remember correctly, John Beamer
was at the bar as well.
Because I remember my character slid across the top of the bar, grabbed John, and threw him backwards out of the way of the car, because I was facing the car as it came through the window.
Correct.
So I shouted out, jumped across.
It should be noted that Ethan, who had switched places with John Beamer earlier that night as far as switching shifts, Ethan was the one that was driving his parents' Porsche through the window. At that point, yes, Jay dove across the bar and got John out of the way of...
Didn't you grab both the doctor and...
He tried to, but missed. Tony tried to grab Lucius and missed. Dr. Lucius, and Henry were both struck by the vehicle. And Ethan was thrown through the windshield out against the large mirror behind the bar and then crumpled, his face littered with glass.
Calling back to scene one. John with the same thing, but since they switched places, obviously Ethan ended up with that result. After that, general chaos ensued.
Yes.
Me running around to check on the people the car had flown over to make sure nobody was hit. Fires breaking out.
I believe Chu got a fire extinguisher and put out the engine fire that was threatening to blow the entire vehicle, which was very heroic. I know that...
I think we got the sprinkler system to go off to help put
one of the waitresses
out.
I believe Rebecca, she pulled the fire alarm and got the sprinklers going off, which helped a lot. And then Lucius was helped up, if I'm not mistaken, by both Tony and Jay.
I went to Lucius. The first thing I did, I think, was I ran to Lucius to make sure the doc was okay.
Right.
And then the first thing the doc did was jump on Ethan.
Ethan, who was severely damaged.
He was dying.
And that's when...
Ethan being the kid that hopped in the Porsche.
Yeah. Right. And Lucius made an incredible role. Exceptional successes in one role, a total of, I believe, 11 successes total, and it takes 5 for an exceptional success in this system, so he actually doubled it to save Ethan's life when there was really, from a storyteller standpoint, Ethan wasn't long for this world and wasn't supposed to survive the scene, but Lucius saved him and made it happen.
Both Henry and the doctor got bumped by the car, but not severely because of...
Just because of the fact that they were warned,
right?
Out of
the way and warning them. In the commotion that was going on, Henry had gotten up, walked towards the door, and was basically trying to slink away when...
He was literally running.
Either you or I noticed it. You definitely went after him, because I remember telling you to stop him. I don't remember who actually noticed him.
Yes, that was huge because he had disappeared, and then someone saw him against the glass of one of the windows, and Tony went sprinting out.
He tracked him down. He wouldn't want to stop and put on his sunglasses and convinced him to stop and go back to his place.
And the scene drew to a conclusion with Henry going back into the condo of, I think it was your condo, wasn't it, Tony?
Yes.
After the doctor working on saving Chu, you went through the car, checked out his cell phone.
Yeah, and looked for any other evidence that might be in there.
Did you get his wallet and stuff? And we got phone calls, a list of the phone calls when he received them. Trying to figure out.
From his girlfriend, right?
We grabbed his phone. It was in the car. That's really the only solid piece of... evidence.
But I remember getting a number of phone calls, when they were and who they were from. That came from the phone. That was very helpful.
Yeah.
Greg, what was his girlfriend's name? Michelle.
And that drew scene three to a close as everyone kind of congregated into Tony's apartment or condo with Henry, trying to convince him not to leave, you know, and to calm down, and that you would make sure that he made it through the night all right, because he was very shaken up by yet another attempt on his life.
I think we might have skipped something.
Well, I went to the...
Yeah, didn't you... I mean, there was a point where we got Ethan stabilized. You called the hospital and had them bring specific equipment and people and have stuff ready so that we could get Ethan out of there. And as you waited for the ambulance to show up, we all took Henry off to Tony's apartment, which was just upstairs.
So your character kind of disappeared to the ER.
We took Ethan to the emergency room.
All right. And that concluded chapter one, scene three, Crash Into Me. Chapter two begins with scene one, Home Sweet Home, where the protagonists decide what to do with Henry. And we'll start off with the scene in Tony's apartment with Henry quite upset and unreasonable. At this point, Michael Clayton has joined the rest of the group in the condo. And take it away, guys, as for what happened in scene one,
Michael,
chapter two.
Clay, by the way.
Clay, sorry.
I kind of show up after the fact of all the excitement, and I get late to the party because part of my cover is I am affiliated with an exhibit that is touring museums, and I have just come into the Cleveland Museum of Art as an assistant curator, so... when I finally show up, I'm whisked out almost immediately, piled into a car with some field personnel to trail Tony as he drives Henry back to his home.
Yeah, Tony originally tried to talk Henry into giving him his keys to his apartment to go there to get like clothes and stuff for him, so he gets got out of his apartment on his own. But Henry wasn't having any of that. He wanted to go too. So the both of them went, and everybody kind of followed us.
You went in a car with Henry. And the rest of us were in my car, following behind, except for you, doctor.
It was definitely your car.
At the hospital. It was definitely my car.
We'll find out why it's
in here. Yeah, we know it's his car.
We drove.
We got to his place and
went to Ohio City.
We parked a little farther behind you.
It wasn't
like
too
half
far.
A block. And we set up a position so we can watch the house in case anything unusual.
You guys happened. Were staking it out from different areas. Or when I went inside, Henry immediately went upstairs to his bedroom to pack stuff up, he said. And I went walking around the house. It was like unusually spotless clean. It looked like nobody even lived in it. It looked like a model home. I noticed there was no garbage in the trash cans, no food in the refrigerator. It was like nobody
there was
lived
something
there.
In the refrigerator.
It was just wine.
Bottles of
red wine.
Bottles of red wine. And that was it. It was really unusual. I was shouting upstairs back and forth and just trying to keep them in conversation.
I remember there was a light rain falling that evening as well. And John, who was, I think John Beamer was in your car with you, was smoking a cigarette out on the curb waiting for you. You were in the car with John, and you were inside the house. Again, you heard footsteps upstairs in his bedroom. You had taken a...
He had the front right corner,
Right. Staked
out of the house. I had the back left, so we had all four walls that
exactly.
We were watching. And it was the back window that Henry decided to climb out of, which I spotted him, and let everybody else know about it. And that took us right to scene two.
Right. Well, and you know, at that around that same
actually,
time,
at that time, I wasn't sure who it was that was coming out the window.
Right. And at that same time, at the hospital, Dr. Lucius was finding out that that the DNA he'd taken from Henry
belonged to a dead guy.
Belonged to someone who was dead. If I remember correctly, the doctor of, I don't know if it was pathology or someone who you'd given that swab to, came back and thought you were pulling a practical joke on him. And was confused as to why you gave him the DNA of a dead person.
You told him it was like a test or something.
Right. So, that comes into scene two of chapter two, and this would be the chase. Henry is just crawling out of his bedroom window seemingly trying to escape from his rescuers.
Something I want to note, too, is like up till now, Henry was very... like subdued, passive. Not, he didn't seem worried or upset, just confused.
He seemed unemotional.
Unemotional,
I remember.
Yeah. I mean, he just like he was like in a stunned, dazed.
That was one of the things that drove Lucius kind of crazy, as he was talking about his wife leaving him and being struck by a car and being mugged on the street. And it was all in this passive, monotone type voice that struck everyone as a little bit odd. So
when he jumped out the window, and I remember the first glimpses people saw of him as he was terrified. It was like the first time we saw any real emotion out of the guy.
Right. And at this point, I believe, as he darts across the backyard, Jay, you start giving chase.
Right, and I actually had to go over some fences and bushes to get to
And
him.
I think you announced it on your phone.
So, yeah, I sent a message.
Push to talk, and, you know, just and everyone then got the idea that he was trying to escape, because you're the only one who saw him.
Right. At first I said someone's coming out the back window, and then as it became evident, it was Henry. But everybody started moving in that area. I remember John, who again is not here, taking chase, if not slipping and falling in the mud.
Yes. Somebody wiped out.
Somebody was in the
car. Chu was in the car and stayed in the car and started driving
around the block to try to cut him off, if I'm not mistaken. And Michael, you chased on foot, correct?
I chased on foot too, but...
So there were three on foot.
Yeah, right. I went out the back door after him too.
I couldn't catch him because he was really fast and... I think only... I'm not sure who it was that actually intercepted.
There was a fence in the way. He jumped
into a neighboring yard.
Someone actually got tripped up on the fence and ripped
it. I believe that was Tony.
Tony came bursting.
I was the second person around. That flopped over the fence. Someone else flopped over the fence.
Oh, I think it was you, Jay, if not mistaken, first.
I took a tumble over the fence as well.
Which gave him a little bit more of some leeway as he was dashing across that backyard. Chu, in the meantime, was driving around the block trying to cut off his route of escape.
Right, because
Michael was... Yeah, a little bit further in
he was
the
running
chase.
Through the backyard and then into someone else's adjoining backyard and then into an adjoining street.
Right, and Chu slipped actually around. As well, Henry did, which allowed Tony to catch up. And what ended up happening...
I thought somebody hit him first before...
Well, what ended up happening was you split up.
Uh-huh. I went around one side of the house.
Jay went down the driveway of the new house, of this new yard that you were in, chasing Henry, who ran down the driveway. You went around the other side, the back side of the home, between the two other homes. I mean, this home and the other home. You came around that direction.
Right.
So you grabbed hold of his shoulder and wiped out just as you did so, spinning him around in the front yard, but not stopping him.
Right.
You wiped out, slid down the driveway. He continued across the front lawn just as Chu came around the corner with his vehicle. That's when... Tony
peeled around the other side of the house.
Peeled around the other side of the house and did a flying tackle. And when you tackled him, his body collapsed into like a corpse is just the best way to describe it. And thousands of bees flew out of his mouth and out of his ears and out of his eyes, up spiraling up into the air as his body just compressed into this moldering corpse that had been dead for months as opposed to this living human that you were talking to.
Therein scarring Jay for life and giving him a fear of bees.
Yes. At that point...
Chu pulled up the car.
Chu pulled up in your car.
Chu pulled up in my car.
Mm-hmm.
He did. That's right. It was still my car. We called Dr. Lucius, told him that we had a body that we needed to do something with. And luckily, Dr. Lucius
had
somewhere in the mines.
Yes, I went over to the scene and we put Henry in a bag and...
No. Body bag.
Did we put him in a body bag and then put him in my car, or we just put him in my car?
I know, we just
at first, you just put him in your car to get him off the street. And then when the doctor arrived, you switched him over to the body bag.
Dripping gooey parts all over my nice, clean car.
And it still doesn't smell the same.
So anyhow, at this point in time, we throw him in the body bag, and we're taking him to my safe house, my secret laboratory.
Under...
Lake Erie and the salt mine.
Actually,
on Whiskey Island near the salt mines, and this is a Chiron safe house that they removed the body to, not a Task Force Siren.
Chiron drop off, chop shop.
Right, which leads us to scene 3, chapter 2.
I can't remember. Didn't we try to sample or taste or analyze the wine? I have a note.
I don't call it at all, but.
Okay, I remember there being a distinction that it was all red wine, and I think we tried to... I can't remember if
you
we...
You grabbed the bottle? You didn't grab the bottle.
Huh. I think I grabbed a bottle of vitamins.
I thought you grabbed some of the red wine.
No, you grabbed some wine, and you were drinking it as you're walking around.
I grabbed a bottle of wine. I don't know if I drank it or not, but...
I just wanted to know if it was...
Right. I don't know.
I have a memory of you drinking the wine as well.
Maybe I did.
And not being anything out of the ordinary, just being red wine.
I drank the Kool-Aid. Turned into a monster and killed
But I wasn't sure if there was some issue about like the vintage or if it was anything like that.
It was all red, Merlots, Cabernets.
Right, but if it was a local, I wasn't sure if it was another.
No, there wasn't anything major as far as that one. It's part of the storyline.
A Boone's Farm.
Right.
Scene 3, Alien Autopsy finds the characters at the Chiron safe house, chop shop, underneath Whiskey Island. And I'll let the characters describe what they did in that scene.
We did a quick autopsy. We did basically the big alien autopsy. Tony and I opened Henry's chest. Inside was a bunch of honeycombs, like...
Replacement parts.
Yeah, replacement parts.
Right, like the heart was honeycombed and and the lungs were honeycombed. And
if I remember correctly, that was nowhere near this.
Right, you are hiding in a corner, I believe.
Whimpering softly.
And there were larvae?
Larvae. We took lots of samples. We took a section of the heart, lungs, blood, larvae. And we called up the boys at Chiron to come and take the body.
Placed it in the refrigerator, and that was the end of scene 3 and also the end of chapter 2.
And that pretty much comes to the end of these recordings. We lost.
And we can actually
pull one. We will just cover with actual recordings.
Thanks for listening to Knights of the Night Actual Play Podcast. Visit kotnpodcast.com for more information on this and other adventures, where you will find character stats, photos, storytelling props, and even a forum for comments and suggestions. Or you could email us directly at feedback@kotnpodcast.com. All music for this podcast has been created and performed by Zen Audio Smith. If you'd like custom professional music created for your podcast or business, please visit zenaudiosmith.com. That's all for now. Join us next episode for more mystery and adventure.